Hey everyone, welcome to a very special episode of Noodle Time. Once again on Twitter Spaces, once again with the gang, because this is a very special week as Matt Jordan, after 7 years of pure putrid hatred, he's finally gone. And also there's been a lot of stuff going on around the Orange Wonderland, and we're here to discuss it with everyone here. And obviously here with me is the man delivering Matt Jordan's severance package. Salata's severance package is Tony Rubio.
Hey guys, how's it going? It's beautiful to hear that. You know, yeah. all respect to MJ, but you know, we're happy. We're here, we're live. I'm blessed.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's been an interesting week. Obviously, it's been a long time coming, the firing, and just the fact that it came on the Monday after the loss to Minnesota United, essentially extending the winning streak to 15 games, and obviously what happened for the past like 7 years, what it feels like forever. It feels weird, but in a good way, you know, that there's actual change. And just thinking about Matt Jordan not being involved anymore, it's something to be happy about, you know?
I mean, I kind of feel empty now, though, to be honest. Like, where do I channel all my empty rage from?
It's De La Hoya now, so
that's that guy's non-existent to me. he's too busy about to fight Jake Paul or something.
Yes. Oh, no. Oh, I can see De La Hoya versus Jake Paul at BBVA Stadium next year or something like that. That's gonna
please, be dude. I would literally buy front row tickets to protest at De La Hoya.
And the only way to buy tickets is through Bitcoins. That would be like the only way.
Throwback. If you guys went to that post Hurricane Harvey like charity game that Holden hosted, wasn't Jake Paul there?
He was there.
Bro, I was there in the crowd. I think I got a picture with him or something. I don't even know.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, guys. Damn.
That's deep cuts right there, if you guys understood that. But no, I mean, let's get down to it. You know, we know Matt Jordan's out. Let's talk about what comes next now that we don't know where to point our hatred towards anymore. So let's figure out who that is and channel it towards them now.
Yeah, and before we get started, though, I just want to give a shout-out to the two supporters that contributed as our Salata supporters for the month of August, being Wilson Calvert, which joined us today, and also Kenny Kapner. They've been supporting us for a while now, and we just wanted to give a shout-out to them for being there, essentially. And essentially, like at this point, outlasting Matt Jordan. So congratulations to them. Tony, you're supposed to clap.
Dude, I'm sorry.
It's all good. Well, yeah.
My greatest thanks to Wilson and Kenny for paying my monthly salary from Andres, my boss.
Yeah.
Sends me $1 on Venmo every month.
At $2.50, well, yes.
I do this for the money.
Yeah. Okay, with that out of the way, let's go ahead and get started. Obviously, the very first topic we're going to talk about is Matt Jordan. Like, it was so weird because I was heading to work on Monday, and, like, it was, like, at 3:30. And, like, I was, like, getting literally on my car, and I see my phone blowing up, and I was like, what is going on? And I didn't even see, like the press release notifications or anything. And I was like, what is this actually happening? Like, no, this is, there has to be a lie, and it's real. And
dude, I was pretty sleeping. Happy. I was sleeping like two hour nap after work. I wake up to like 50 million notifications that Matt Jordan's gone. I thought I was dreaming, but man, it's what we all wanted, but like literally, like I said, it happens in the snap of a second, and now it's not that. Obviously, I was joking about where to point our rage next, but now I'm kind of curious at what comes next. And luckily, if, like you guys, most of you guys heard probably on Glenn Davis's Soccer Matters show last night, Mr. Ted Segal came down and did a little 18-minute interview. If you guys haven't heard of that, please go and give Glenn some love, because that was a great interview. And, I mean, I think 98% of us feel pretty good after that. Obviously, we're not going to just praise Segal blindly, especially in the situation that we're in. But obviously, it's not his fault. I think the only person that wasn't happy was maybe Fede. I saw his tweets there. he has something to be mad about. Maybe we'll let him chime in and let us know what he thought. But I mean, it was pretty interesting with Segal specifically mentioning how he's going to give everybody a fair shake. He said that again in the interview, and then he's just like a cut and dry kind of guy, it seems like. And he was like, but statistically speaking, the past 7 years, Matt Jordan like failed the organization. I don't know. He said something along those lines, and it was just the most beautiful words to like ever come out of somebody's mouth in this organization.
No lies detected. No lies detected. That's how it is. But yeah, he obviously didn't share much outside of like the search for that new GM, potentially a sporting director, as well as what goes ahead. But I feel like he obviously had to like keep it official, keep his standards. But it was a pretty good interview for the most part, I'd say.
I mean, I think the best part of it was what you just mentioned, that Glenn asked him, you know, is this a role that we could possibly see split into two? And, I mean, I think it was obviously a pretty cut and dry response as well, but he was like, yeah, I mean, it's a huge possibility that we could be looking at a sporting director and a GM. And obviously my mind just goes to, you know, Onstad, Weibel, GM, sporting director duo, let's go, glory years.
Pat Onstad and Craig Weibel in the same organization? No, that's obviously too good to be true, but I'd take either one. I'll be
suddenly,
fine with either one.
Suddenly we beat the Revolution in penalty shootouts again.
No, that would be... But I checked to see if we're in a time machine or something, honestly.
But, I mean, so that... Obviously, I mean, there was a lot said in that interview with Ted. I took some time to think about it. And I think there's a huge possibility. I don't know what all you guys think in the space, is that there's a huge possibility that we can see a GM signed before the end of this season. Because there's a lot of moving parts. You know, Tab Ramos's contract ends this year. Obviously, he's not going to get fired no matter how bad we're doing, in my opinion. We kind of heard it from Ted that there's no imminent decision on Tab Ramos right now. So obviously, his contract's going to get played out. But when the season ends, I feel like you have to announce whether Ramos is here or not. You can't really wait a month after the season with the coach that we already have and then say, oh, hey, you know, we're gonna keep bringing him on, because that'll look like kind of bad in the press, in my opinion. So I'm thinking they're really going to try to bring in a GM fast. And like Ted Segal said in that interview himself, hopefully the GM has a say on Tab Ramos's future, which I'm sure Tab is not thrilled to hear that, but it's the reality of the situation.
Oh, yeah. And if you guys want to participate, obviously just request, raise your hand, and we should be letting you in whenever you guys are ready.
I just sent Federico an invite, because if he's available, I would like to hear his opinion on what he didn't like about Ted Segal's comments. And then if Fede joins, then we'll let David speak a little bit of his mind on that as well.
Oh, gotcha. I think Federico came in first, yeah.
Bienvenidos, Fede.
Hey, guys. Fede. How are you doing? It's good to be in contact after who knows how many months.
Welcome.
A long
man.
Time,
welcome.
Yeah.
No, so let us know what you think about just Ted Segal's comments. Obviously, everybody's happy that Matt Jordan's gone, but I wanted to see the other side of it, because obviously you had some nuanced kind of take on those words, and not just blind happiness like the rest of us.
No, well, you know, you got to find something to talk about. No, I think it's mostly positive. You know, I think it is. We all know that there were problems in the front office, and I think that it's for example, I think it was a good decision to start by getting Jordan out and not Tab, which was a very easy way out. You know, we've seen it happen in the past, and that's a positive thing. You know, you got to cut the problem from the root. On the other hand, I did hear some things that I wasn't too excited about. You know, I think the way that he underestimated the Latin or the weight of the Latin community, even though I believe in the importance of including the Dynamo brand, if you want to call it that way, in the whole Houston community. But I think that, you know, it's inevitable to think about the Latin community as one of the most important ones. And he kind of, you know, kicked the ball to the side there when he asked him about that, when Glenn asked him about that. So that was a little concerning for me. And then, of course, you know, I talked about the business part that, you know, he talks very, very, you know, in a corporate way about the Dynamo. It makes sense. That's his job. That's what he has to do. But from my point of view and my way of understanding things, which he also mentioned, he said, you know, I want a winning brand, and you have to start that on the field. I think that it has to do with football. You know, anything that has to do with the actual sport that will make the Dynamo the kind of team that the city and the people that support it deserve. You know, I think it has to do. It's going to have to do with the sport itself more than with a brand, or more than with thinking about corporate things, which I think he's on the way. I don't know what you guys thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100%. It's kind of like we can't improve the brand image without winning, in a way, and we've seen that this season. With all, it doesn't matter how many Audi clubs or, you know, sports social seats we have.
Deanna Water promoting the Lexus Club, like, before the Minnesota United game. That was interesting, but yeah.
No shade. I just wanted to bring up a comment that, if you allow me a quick further. I'm forgetting her last name, but Dynamo fan Kylie Austin, I think she said something about how it would almost be great to see, you know, one of the current owners, or, you know, somebody come in almost as an ambassador. And he's talked about it himself on Twitter. Stuart Holden, like, would be an awesome guy to bring in to be almost like the face of the team. Like, maybe the guy will have like 2% ownership, or maybe nothing. But to have somebody that comes and be the face of the team and you know, kind of do all the things that Fede is talking about culture-wise, and then let a guy like Ted Segal just, you know, be cut dry, be a robot, but, you know, do the things that need to get done behind the scenes business-wise.
Yeah, and obviously when I mentioned the Deanna Water promoting the Lexus Club, I was joking for the most part, but yeah. She has to run the business, obviously, and promoting is one of her things, but yeah. Like Federico said, like, I was mostly concerned about Matt Jordan leaving first, as soon as possible. And obviously the main reason being that the past 7 years, but for the most part is to essentially start the process to look for a new GM as soon as possible. So that way, whenever we finish the season, we could have like a GM lineup. And from there we can decide, like, depending on the result from here, if it's worth it to keep tab or not. So it's going to be interesting though. So we just have to wait and see from there. But yeah, we can go ahead and switch to David, since he's been waiting for a while. So yeah, well, Federico, thank you so much. It's been a while though. We'll talk again soon for sure.
Yeah. Thank you guys for doing this, and let's keep it going. Congratulations as always. Let's go.
Next time in Spanish, bro. Next time we gotta get it in Spanish.
Dale, papá.
Sí.
Vamos.
Sí, todo Dynamo, sí. All right, let's go ahead and get David in right now. So let's see.
We'll get David, and then we'll get Wilson, and then we'll see where the conversation's going at that point. Well, we're in no rush here. Everything's recorded on the podcast, just to let you guys know. So you'll hear your own voice at one point if you want to. But let us know what you guys are feeling. Dial into the Twitter spaces.
Yeah, good. David should be coming on right now.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
Oh, good, David. How are you?
I'm great. As Tony himself said, he was asleep, and I was also asleep when the big news happened, and I kind of woke up. And in those moments where you're still a little bit groggy, you're not really sure what's going on around you, I did not think it was real until I checked multiple Twitter group chats and realized, oh my God, the reign of hell is over. Yes. And I, you know, obviously, as every Dynamo fan was, I was ecstatic. But the thing is, I have been thinking towards the future. I don't want to toot my own horn or anything, but I feel like I've been thinking towards the future a lot more than a lot of Dynamo fans, because
No tooting horns here.
What, Tony? What'd you say? Say it with your chest, Tony. What'd you say?
I said no tooting horns here.
All right, man. All right, man. All right. I thought we were all adults here. But, you know, just because the general manager gets fired doesn't mean instant success is going to happen. Really, what we have to do from a club standpoint now is obviously get the right people in to replace him. And I say people because I think that there should obviously be more than one at the helm, you know, having a general manager and a sporting director or whatever, you know, fugazi titles you want to give to it, where they both have power. And, you know, Dynamo fans have been talking about, you know, Weibel, Onstad, get somebody who's a former player in. And obviously that would be a plus, but I don't think that's what we need to focus on. I think what we as a team need to focus on is someone who will take this kind of the club that's been, you know, I'd say a little bit backwards thinking for a long time. You know, we haven't made the same moves as a lot of MLS teams. You know, MLS teams have been funding their academies for a long time, and we are just now kind of catching up on the, like, we're kind of the back end of the bell curve when it comes to MLS teams, and we do have to play catch up. You know, there's nothing really we can say that'll change that. We are behind on the entire curve, whether it be, you know, spending big money on these South American wonder kids like we've seen, you know, LAFC, Atlanta United, et cetera, do, or funding the academy, or, you know, just various ways. Like, you know, Nashville already created a successful system and made the playoffs in their first season while spending even less than we were. And I think what we need to focus on is becoming an analytically driven team. And that's why I think my number one option for someone to come join this front office is Will Kuntz from LAFC. He has a phenomenal pedigree. He, you know, he was an important part of the New York Yankees front office as soon as he graduated college. And, like, if you guys don't know about him, read up on him. You know, he was, like, obviously, I'm not a big fan of the Yankees. I'm an Astros fan, but it's indisputable what he's done. You know, he was an intern and they picked him up immediately, and then he joined LAFC. And, like, everywhere he's gone, there's been success. They've used the analytics correctly. And I think that's what we need to become. We need to become a team that can kind of maximize everything that we have, whether it be homegrown players, whether it be, you know, cheap contracts like Derek Jones and stuff like that. Or, you know, whether it be bringing someone in from another team that they might not be using him correctly. And that's what we can do, because even with Ted Segal, you know, he came in, we're still not going to be spending the same as Arthur Blanc. And so what I constantly keep thinking about is the Moneyball quote, where he says, if you play like the Yankees in here in the front office, you will lose to the Yankees out there. And that's what we need to do. We need to build a group of people that can use the newfangled soccer analytics and just, you know, stuff like that properly, efficiently, and effectively. And I think Will Kuntz is the perfect person to do that. You know, Weibel and Onstad both are former players, so they have that part, you know, of their pedigree. But, you know, Matt Jordan was also a former player. He played for Montreal for a while and then transitioned to the front office there.
Yeah, he played for Dallas, bro. Can't forget
yeah,
that.
Yeah, too. Yeah, like, like, there's kind of this split in sports, not just soccer at this point. I study sports management in college. I come from an analytics background. And you have the old school players that are, like, you know, intangibles and whatnot. And then you have the new school analytics guys, which is why I think you can get both. You can get an Onstad and you can get a Kuntz in the same front office and have them work together and work properly, and it'll work. And you've seen it work with, you know, a bunch of other successful teams. I mean, he's currently vice president of soccer operations at LAFC and been an integral part of their success. And I think that, you know, he would be perfectly happy making that next step. He got interviewed for the San Jose Earthquakes job. And, you know, I think that the Dynamo is the job that you'd rather have if you're someone like that. You have a new owner who's shown a willingness to spend. You've got, you know, a major market that you can tap into, and if you do it correctly. And there's a lot of potential in the team. And, you know, obviously the fact that your predecessor sucked plays to your advantage there. But I think that, you know, he's someone who can kind of build this team up. And that's really what you need. You need someone who's going to play the long game. You need the patience. You need the patience from everyone, including the fans, because this is not a one season job. We have to build long-term success in a team. And I think you do that using the numbers to finally get ahead of the curve of some other MLS teams, because we are so far behind at this point. And
yeah,
I just think, you know, it might just be the fact that, you know, I love the new analytics, and that's what I study in school, and that's what I want to do for the rest of my life. But I think that's what you need to do, because history has shown that the teams that are first to these numbers in all other sports win using them properly.
Pretty much, yeah. And it's a very interesting way to look at it. Like, obviously, like, I'm Team Weibel and Team Ostad, like, forever. But there's obviously other valid candidates that can fill a job here as well. And it's pretty good to, like, just essentially keep an open mind about it. So, you brought, like, a pretty good conversation point, David. And yeah. Obviously, there's a long way to go, and that's pretty much how I feel like it has to go. So essentially, like, no decisions just like Tetsigal said in the interview. But yeah, it's a process pretty much. But yeah, and definitely not horn tuning at all. So yeah, thank you, David.
Yeah, I do have one more thing. I did find it a little ironic when Tony called Andres a sellout after working for FC Dallas, like, you know, with the team instead of just the restaurant.
I brought that up myself.
Yeah,
you
did, but you said it was okay because you were unpaid, and I'd argue that makes it worse because you're free labor for the enemy. You know,
yeah, I work for both teams, and I'm here now, so that's enough.
Yeah, but you know, you might be a Benedict Arnold. We can never find out.
Oh god!
And now I sell insurance for a living, so that's how it works out.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Thank you, David.
Yeah. It's always nice to be on here. It's always nice to have kind of a forum for our thoughts. You know. Thank you, guys.
Friend of the podcast.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, yeah. David forever. But yeah.
No, I mean, I wanted just to, I mean, expand on that. Like the comments in the conversation we've been having on Twitter the past couple of days. It got a lot of traction, the video I put up about Mike Tshabala, just kind of going on a rant about former players and abandonment. And if we're being real, I think, my honest opinion, I think it's a bit of an exaggeration, because, obviously there's always things that organizations could do better, but I think, you know, even though some of these guys aren't in roles directly with the team, you know, Ching in some way or another is part of the club. I don't know if he's being paid, but, you know, he's pretty much like an ambassador. You know, we got guys like Boswell, Driver, all these guys that are in the community that have never left or come back specifically to live in Houston. I don't know if they just found the Houston girl when they were here and they end up not leaving, but let's just think it's for the Dynamo. But I think the Dynamo haven't done terribly in that perspective. And like talking about Rico Clark and leaving for Vancouver, I don't blame the Dynamo for that, because, you know, Tab had his guys. He brings in Martin Vasquez, he brings Omid Namazi, his guys from the national team. So I don't blame him for not giving Rico an assistant coaching job, especially right when Rico retired. And then Vancouver gives him an assistant coach job right out of the bat. So I can't blame him that much. Somebody that messaged me on the side in DMs and kind of expressed their opinion to me about how I think how we should slow the roll on bringing the legends back. And I mean, I was never 100% team legends, but it was definitely good to hear another opinion, and especially how David's talking. Like, you know, legends coming back doesn't mean champions are won. They should definitely be guys that are interviewed, but at the end of the day, like, the best guy for the job is the best guy for the job. So that's something good to keep in mind and not get the mob mentality against the Dynamo 24/7 and say, bring back Ching to GM because that went so well for him at the Dash, you know? So that's just my side rant on that. But what do you think, Andres?
Oh, yeah. Like, I pretty much mentioned a lot yesterday that, like, I think it would be okay, like, if we kept, like previous players or, like, players that not necessarily may have, like, a ton of significant time, like, in mind, like, when it comes to, like, decision making. But obviously not every player might bring in, like, viable input or anything. But yeah, like, obviously when it comes to, like, legends, branching obviously being one and obviously being involved in the organization and potentially people like Pat Onstad or Craig Weibel or pretty much like other players in their stature influencing the team on a daily basis pretty much. I feel like it obviously like they to an extent if they do it like at this point in time it's mostly because they really care about the organization and I feel like that's what matters to me the most. And obviously if they want to just get the team moving forward, awesome. But obviously it's part of the process still when it comes to looking for the right people. Just make sure that they actually want to be there and if you want to get the program to like the next level, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy with San Jose, with Cincinnati. On the GM search too, you know, Ted mentioned it on Glenn's radio show. They're trying really not to give any information away about that. We got Dennis DeClosa from LA Galaxy. He's the Dutch/Mexican guy who used to be the Mexican national team's general manager. He's done so-so with LA, but I really think that's a really viable option for San Jose or Cincinnati, especially Cincinnati with the Dutch connection. And you know, like David mentioned, Will Koontz from LAFC, you know, Chris Leach from San Jose, all these guys that have been in MLS for a long time are really being sought after for these GM positions. So the Dynamo are no different. I think it's definitely going to be a domestic signing. I would be really surprised if we brought in a general manager that doesn't already know MLS. So it's too early to know what's going on. And honestly, I don't think most of us are well-versed enough in the front offices and the GMs of MLS that are available right now to comment too much on it, but it's just always fun to speculate. But regardless, moving on to hear a little bit more thoughts. Wilson's been waiting in the rafters for a little bit here, so why don't we bring him on and hear what the number one Foxtrot/Needle Time supporter has to say.
Absolutely. Alrighty, what's up, Will?
Happy Jordan Out Week. Here we are, finally.
Yes, finally. It's been 7 years.
It's certainly been a journey. You know, I think we've been numbed a little bit because of the 15 unbeaten streak, but you know, it's pretty interesting run of form over the last 7 years now. So very much excited about the future.
Oh yeah, so like the sky is the limit, I guess, but obviously there's still a process, so we'll see. Like we'll see if Testigol is a man of his word. And And yeah, we'll see. It's still pretty early.
Yeah, I was really excited by his interview. I think most Dynamo fans were on the radio the other night. And, you know, I think that just making the change and making the effort, you know, I think back to a couple of years ago when we, you know, we tried Kubo. It didn't work out super well. But, you know, I remember being excited about, you know, having the that can really, you know, potentially make a difference. And, you know, I think we were an Austin Bold player, Amobi Okugo, was talking on Twitter the other day about how Houston has like a huge Nigerian population. They're also very much in soccer. And, you know, I definitely think that any type of DP that he brings in is going to be aimed towards, you know, maybe energizing a new set of fans. Of course, you know, maybe a big Mexican player doesn't make the most sense. But I don't know. What do y'all think? Is there a country that we could, you know, that we should kind of aim for that may bring extra fans into Houston Stadium?
I think it's a tricky question to answer because you've heard it over the years from Matt Jordan and from other people. Oh, you know, we don't kind of corporate speak, like, you know, we don't want to focus on one star and waste our resources on yada yada yada. And obviously, yes, that's a true in a sense, but it's a little naive or foolish to think that there's not a business aspect to the footballing side. So I think we definitely should, you know, see what the options are, see if they fit the people that we're trying to bring in. But of course, you know, if you got a John Obi Mikel available and wants to come to MLS for a couple of years, then hey, why don't you sit him at the six? And, you know, if the Nigerian people come, then the Nigerian people will come. Same with the Mexican fans, same with everything. But Ted mentioned it himself in his interview that it's definitely something they're looking into. He said the little, you know, the little tidbit, like Matt Jordan always said, you know, obviously you have to say the disclaimer. We're not looking to spend money like silly, but I think he's serious about bringing in a star that will move the needle per se. So I think 100% it's something the Dynamo need to do. And I think it's something that we will see coming hopefully in the next, you know, year or two.
I kind of think about, you know, the Astros being so bad a couple of years ago and, you know, the attendance was down and it's kind of hard to compete against a team that has been so good for several years. There's only, you know, so many entertainment dollars to go around. And I think that it may just be as simple as winning, you know, competing in the playoffs and, you know, having a situation where fans can come to the game and see a few goals and see a win and don't see a 89th minute equalizer, you know, for the other team. And so, you know, it just may be that simple. So maybe we don't need a special Central American or Mexican star, you know, it may just be winning.
I think it's 100% winning to start, but I'll let Andres share his thoughts on that.
No, yeah, like it's pretty much, it all comes down to winning. We, like, the last time I've seen BBVA Stadium, like, completely full, like, to the brim, like an actual sellout, like, it was, like, the Western Conference Final, I guess the Sounders a couple of years ago. And yeah, like, pretty much, like, everyone's going to know whenever the Dynamo are winning. And, like, it would be nice if like, we can get, like, DPs from other countries to, like, hopefully attract more people. But, like, at the end of the day, it's pretty much having a pretty a team that performs very well on the field, which happened in 2017, and like the playoff run, you saw in the playoff run, and yeah, it just pretty much comes out to the team.
I think another kind of unique thing I'm potentially excited about is Ted's background is in real estate development. I think that's how he and his family made, you know, the most of his fortune, and a big part of running a sports franchise is leveraging, you know, the area around your stadium. You can think about Jerry World in Dallas, right, where they have, you know, bars and restaurants and all these other things. And we've seen that a little bit in MLS as well. Sporting Kansas City has like a big bar that is, you know, utilized on non-game days. Of course, it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere. But, you know, the Dynamo BBVA Stadium is in a really great place that's really developing, and it'll be interesting to see if you know, he has any interest in kind of biting off more of a piece of Edo, and, you know, maybe we'll see something interesting. I think that you know, Pitch 25 is a perfect example of something that, you know, appears to be pretty successful. Brian Chang, of course, involved. And, you know, how much more sense would that have made if that was owned and operated by the Dynamo and, you know, integrating more casual fans that or even non-soccer fans, you know, and plugging them into the Dynamo. I actually saw some comments on the Houston subreddit about how it's hard for them to get the Dynamo game on in Pitch 25 sometimes. And so that's just wild to me. But, yeah, and so it'll be interesting to see if his history as a property developer can be utilized to further, you know, create more value for his investment in the team.
Yeah, it reminds me of Lucky's Pub since they closed down last year. Like, it'll be interesting, like, and that's been pretty much, like, part of Orange Avenue for, like, years. So, obviously, assuming that this theory, like, could be true, like, it would be hard to not think about, like, that property, you know? So, but yeah, like, that's interesting to think about, though, honestly.
I mean, no, for sure. It's Oh, go ahead, Wilson.
I was going to say, he bought the team for a reason, you know, and he sounds like a soccer fan, but, you know, this isn't a vanity project, of course. Like, he invested, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. He's looking to, you know, grow that investment. And, you know, you have to make changes. Clearly, the way the Dynamo were heading is not, you know, adding any additional value to the team. You know, they were kind of taking advantage of a rising sea that lifts all ships. And, you know, it sounds like he's going to come in here to make some changes and, you know, create some additional value. And we get to watch some fun soccer, maybe.
That's the hope. That's the bottom line. But it's definitely an interesting topic to bring up about Siegel's background. But, you know, I'm sure it will come organically east downtown. The East End is a neighborhood that's obviously gentrifying rapidly. But, you know, whether not to get into the nuances of gentrification, but obviously bringing huge commercial opportunities, huge residential apartments coming up. So I have no doubt in my mind that Seagull and whatever other partners he have are going to be on top of that, you know, along with Ching, along having those partners, it's, you know, it's only going to grow his little bar empire even more. So just to kind of move the ball a little bit forward and, you know, move a little bit on from Ted and from Matt Jordan, what do you guys think about Tab Ramos for the rest of the season? What happens, what needs to happen for him to keep his job? Or is it, theoretically, if Tab loses every single game for the rest of the season, does it not matter? Is Ted going to give him a quote unquote fair shake regardless? Or what's a step forward is my question for Tab, and looking forward to the next season already, because it's pretty much lost this season.
Obviously, win as soon as possible will be the first step. after 15 games, it's an interesting path right now for Tab Ramos, and obviously with a new GM potentially coming in, we still don't know how soon it's gonna be. Like, if it's gonna be by the end of the season, obviously start winning will be like the first step, and from there, just keeping consistency. I feel like just keeping consistency will be like will eventually decide if Tab is gonna stay here or not, and like if the results like just stay the way they are like right now, I feel like he's just gonna be out within the next few weeks. So and obviously, as Segal mentioned, that there's no like imminent decision on Tab Ramos, but obviously that's in I feel like in a broad perspective, but it may not be a while before we know what's gonna happen with Tab, like if the results keep up. So we'll just see.
I mean, Wilson, Robert, what is y'all's opinion on that? Is there a path for Tab to save his job for next year still? Or
yeah, I think so. I think that Tab can only play the players that he has, you know, been given, and I think that he's gotten some of his guys, but those guys have been, you know, the discount bin a little bit. So you know, we have 12 games left this year. We're staring at the MLS historical winless streak in the face. We're at 15 winless. The record is the 99 Metro Stars at 19. And, you know, clearly playoffs are not really on the table for us this year, even as a person that's currently holding a $20 gambling ticket for the Dynamo to win the MLS Cup this year. Yeah, I think I can probably lose that at this point. But, you know, I think that if Tab loses the next or goes winless over these next five, there's going to be so much media around the Dynamo being historically bad for MLS that I think that they cut Tab then. If Tab can manage to pull out some results and kind of, you know, give us up there a little bit closer towards not making the playoffs just by a little bit, then, you know, he'll have a shot at actually being, you know, the coach again next year.
Yeah, I mean, can I add a little bit to that?
Please.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I think what's funny is, you know, everybody likes to say that they're doing a long-term project or, you know, the long-term plan of the club. When it comes down to the manager in particular, it's all about results. I think Mourinho says it best. It's a results business. And if you don't get the results, you're gone. So some could argue that Tab hasn't gotten the results already. I will say, I think Wilson made a really good point when it comes down to the players that he's had available to him. He's been put up against it from the start. And so I think we should at least give him till the end of the season, unless something just goes totally awry. But I think also it matters in the team spirit, which I know is hard to quantify. But when you look out and you look on the pitch and you watch the games, progress kind of stares at you in the face. And whether it's, you know, not conceding that 89th minute goal like we always do, or if you see, you know, good substitutions and stuff like that, there's these little things, you know, that managers do that all add up to a better product on the field. And while we haven't seen that so far from Tab, I feel like it's not too late. That the clock is ticking, but I'd like to see how he responds to this change in management. You know, I imagine he's going to be given a lot more freedom in a lot of ways, and maybe have his voice be heard a little bit more by without Matt Jordan as an intermediary. So I'm excited to see, you know, what these next few games hold and what Tab's really made of, so that, you know, we can know what the future of the club is. But just to one last point is that, you know, I think we talk about the GM and the front office, and you're right, they've been a total disaster over the last especially 5 years. I think that what we really need to focus on now, I mean, I think the change is happening. We've seen, you know, Matt Jordan being fired, but we need to concentrate on the pitch too. I think maybe this whole week has gotten us thinking about the front office. Let's concentrate on, you know, what's going on the pitch, which is an absolute disaster. So I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts on what maybe some of those next moves that would signal progress for you, like when it comes to on the field. Because I see some of the signings that we've made, and some of them actually seem like pretty good signings, and yet it just hasn't clicked on the field. And that's where it's interesting to me, where that has to be on Todd Ramos, right?
For sure. And I like the points you made, because it's almost like when, obviously, in adversity is when you see somebody's real side, you know, you see the real them. And you can argue that Tab hasn't had the resources and COVID and everything. But no managerial season's ever going to be perfect unless, you know, you're at PSG playing with Qatari money. And that's not going to happen for the near future. I mean, who knows? It could with Houston and our oil economy. But that's the part that has bothered me the most. Not that I'm team Tab out, team Tab in. Just looking at it from the middle, Tab's failed to evolve the team to even compete in these games, because my biggest qualm the whole season has been our lack of creation. Terrible in chance creation. Yeah, so bad. And
I think a lot of it has to come down to I think a lot of it has to come down to his style of play. It actually reminds me a lot. It's like a reverse Mourinho, kind of maybe like a Pep. That's hilarious to answer these things like this. But he has a certain way of playing that he likes to play. And at the U20 level, he was allowed to play like that, you know, where this high pressing possession system, right? Unfortunately, when you have a team that is lacking in quality, you're not going to be able to play that and win this league. I think it's very clear. We've seen that over the season, right? And so when I look at, like, maybe Wilmer for the Dynamo, but, you know, other coaches around the world too, they adapt, like you just said. They adapt and they say, okay, you know, this is my system, but my system's not working, obviously. I'm going to try something new. Or we need to change, right? And I don't think that Tab Ramos has done that. I think he's just been very, very stubborn on his own ways. And while I don't necessarily think his system is bad, actually, I think that his system doesn't work with the players we have right now. And I think a more pragmatic approach would be to, okay, yeah, this isn't where exactly where I want the team to be at the end of, you know, my time here. But for now, we need to figure out how we can get some wins on the board, right? Because if every loss piles up, it just becomes harder and harder to come back. And it's closer and closer 100%. To losing his job.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating because, like, to hell with your system when we're on a 15 game losing streak, man. Like, you have to answer to the fans whether you like it or not. And obviously, maybe you care a little bit more about the big wigs up top. But obviously, they don't care about your process when you're 15 games down the hole, in my opinion. So that's just been my biggest absolute, what do you call it? Just what's bugged me the most. He has players in the doghouse that he's just refused to take out. And you have to put those things aside when your team's going through such a bad form, because at the end of the day, you have to answer for it. So having Bahamich, having Quintero, having all these guys just in the doghouse when you're doing so, so bad, and your reluctance to change from a 4-3-3 and change, I love Fafa, but come on, man, that's this team's star right now, leading goal scorer pretty much. And it's just inexcusable to finish it. The thought right there that we sold Christian Ramirez, who wasn't doing too well for us, but I think he's a quality striker, and we all know that.
Of course.
And not even to sign a USL backup striker, not even to bring back Michael Salazar, who was at RGB before. Anybody, a warm body to go up top that's not Ariel Lassiter, for the love of God.
Yeah, I think that's another good point, is that when you look across the league at the teams at the top, and we talked a little bit about signings and like big name signings, I think it's really important to realize that while we don't necessarily need a big name, we need a star player. Every team, every successful team needs a star player, in my opinion. I mean, yes, you need your role players are super important too. The guys off the bench and the guys that aren't flashy and then doing dirty work in the back. But you need a star player. And when I look at this team, we've been devoid of a star player since Elise and Manotas left, right? And I haven't there. You need someone that the other defense is like, oh crap, I've got to play against this guy. And I think that's where I hope that, you know, Ted Segal can say, come in and bring someone like that. Because our answer to that in previous years has been, this season, really, just we're not going to have a star player. I mean, maybe Tim Parker, which I don't know. That's not going to cut it as much as I like Tim Parker. And then, or you know, in previous, it's been signing guys who are kind of like not really star players. They're guys that could be star players. Bahamich is maybe one, or Tomas Martinez, right? These are guys that could have been star players. Yeah.
Don't say that man's name in this podcast ever again.
It's just been very sad to see our organization cheap out. Where I think if we would have had one or two really quality players that you know you can are consistent players. Like remember we had Rico Clark and he was you knew you were gonna get from him, right? You just knew what you were gonna get every single game. And yeah, he got old
off the bench, yeah.
But man, what a guy. You know he's gonna put in the effort. And I don't see that when I cut. Maybe Vera is the only one that I look across the field and he looks like he cares every single game.
100%. Matias Vera is the motor of this team.
100%.
Definitely one of the most underrated players in MLS, and we'd be fools to get rid of him, because that is somebody that needs to be with this team throughout any transition that we make. That's what I was gonna bring up next. Like, I don't know what you guys think, but the players, in my opinion, that we need to build around for next season. I think you keep obviously Hadebe and Parker. And you can't get rid of everybody at once. It's too hard to do that with a contract. But we build around Hadebe, Parker, Coco, Matias, and Tyler Pascher. If you can stay healthy, I think those are your pillars of this team, which is not a bad spine. Yeah. And everybody else, in my opinion, is replaceable or has to fight for the respect they want on this squad.
Yeah, and you forgot our star player, Darwin Serén. I was the guy that deserves to start every single game. I'm joking.
Bro, you're gonna piss off some wind here, man. He's El Salvador through and through.
Yeah. Oh yeah, like he's been, like obviously he's been not you know his best form yet, but obviously like I really appreciate how he played, especially last year. But yeah. It's been like I still don't get it though. Why is he playing right now?
I've seen a Salvadorian fans, so like there's quite a contingent of them that does not want Darwin Serén on the national team starting, but obviously that's not going to change, because for all the bad performances he puts in, there's like, you know, every 2 and 5 he's like good or amazing, and then you're like, where did this come from?
I was going to say one more thing about just kind of players in general. When I look at like the 4-3-3 pressing system, a team that kind of like comes to my mind is Chelsea. Obviously, totally different scales. But when I see the thing that I see is the problem here with Tab's system is we talked about chance creation, right? We don't have that creative player. It doesn't have to be a number 10 necessarily, just a creative player to get those chances to the, you know, sometimes isolated striker or false nine or winger that's playing striker or whoever we have up there, right? What do you guys think the solution is there? Like, is it an out and out number 10? Is it just a creative, you know, winger? How do you guys see us create? Because we talked about the spine of the team, right? And out of the spine of the team, I mean, maybe Coco, you could say is somewhat of a chance creator, but I don't even think he's an out and out 10 sorts.
No way.
In my opinion. So like, where do you guys see that creative spark coming from? Because obviously, I think Darwin Quintero has other ideas after this season.
I think Tab has to put aside his system preferences and sign a number 10 for this club next year. Obviously, maybe somebody that has a little bit more defensive capabilities than Darwin Quintero, if you're really so strung up on that. But, you know, Coco, Matias, Vera, you know, probably bring back Derek Jones for another season. All these guys are definitely fine to play behind, but are not your chance creators, and we've seen that this season, you know, trying to play Joe Corona at the 10 every single freaking game.
Yeah, the other thing that's so frustrating to me personally is that, like, our wingers, other than maybe Pasher, are not chance creators at all.
One-dimensional.
Yeah, very one-dimensional. I mean, and actually historically undimensional. I mean, if you look at Fafa Pico, and I love the guy. He works like he's a madman. He's a bulldog, but he's literally one of the worst chance creators. He has very little end product. And when you're signing him with the idea of starting him the entire season, which was obviously the case, right? Then that is an error from the, you know, from whoever signed him, whether it was, you know, Tab's idea or Matt Jordan's idea. The chance creation has to come from somewhere. And we have a bunch of one-dimensional players that just need to go, in my opinion, and need to be replaced with people who are more balanced and can do more for the team. Do you guys have that same feeling?
Well, Robert, I kind of want to know, is this the end of Memo on the Dynamo?
That's a great question.
Like, I think, you know, on the homegrown deal, I think this is the last year.
I can't imagine just from a that's a PR nightmare if he leaves. But I think also he has quality. I mean, he's shown he's had quality in little spurts. His consistency has always been his issue. I think for the right money, of course, he's got to stay. He's had a tough run, but he also, you know, when he plays well, he is, I think, ideally on a real competitor, you know, MLS competitive team, like a Seattle or, you know what I mean? I think he's a bench player. And I think that deep inside, we don't want him to be a bench player just because, you know, he's the homegrown and whatever. But I think that's where his role would be if we really were being ambitious. Do you guys think that, or is that a little too harsh?
I mean, the guy's in the worst form of his life, though, to be fair. So I'm not going to judge him for his whole career based on this season.
Sure.
But it was so much pressure going on. Tab at the beginning of the season saying Memo is a national team caliber player. He's got to be the face of this club. He starts the first three games off on fire and absolutely fizzles out. So I feel for the guy, and I think he's most of our probably favorite player at this club. I would love to have him on the podcast one day if it was possible just to hear how he's feeling this season. But I think Memo has a huge chance to leave, like Wilson said, because of his contract. But I think he's probably really valued within this league for being a domestic player.
Oh, yeah.
What he's done. And I'm pretty sure he's severely underpaid with the Dynamo. If somebody's seen those contracts, I don't know.
Everyone is severely underpaid at the Dynamo.
he's only making like 200K.
Shocking, man. Yeah.
I think Memo's at 300.
Oh, really? No, it's not too bad. But I think he can probably definitely get a better deal somewhere else in the league.
Yeah.
And like Robert said, maybe he's a bench player somewhere else. But I think Memo can 100% be a starter in this league. And on a team like Seattle, obviously, the best team in the league.
I can't imagine Seattle puts a bid in for Memo and puts him on the bench. Oh, that would be disgusting. That would be so good.
You see a guy like Kellen Rowe at Seattle,
yeah,
for example, who is not a bad player by any means.
Yeah.
But the amount of minutes he's getting on that team, even though he's on the bench, he's rotating in so much, spot starting. I think Memo is a level above that. So there's definitely a huge chance we lose him this offseason. But in my opinion, you keep him around for not just for the culture, but what he brings quality wise. And I think you trust him to rebound in a different system. But if Tab stays, I think Memo's gone.
Mm, that's a good point. I like that.
So Memo's actually, I was just looking at our like contracted amounts. So the midfield is easily the lowest paid position on our team, which I mean,
surprise, pretty surprise. Obvious,
yeah, if you watch the game. So the only midfielder now with Coco, we don't know. I don't think we know exactly how much she's paying. It's going to be different with him. But the only midfielder making more money than Memo is Vera, and he's on 350.
That is a crime.
Man.
That is a crime. 350, he should be making so much more than that.
Yeah. So that's pretty rough. I've got to jump off here in a minute. The other thing I wanted to mention, definitely the big circle, I think, on the calendar for Tab would be the Dallas game coming up on the 18th, so two Saturdays from now. So we still have a chance to win El Capitan this season. We tied Dallas the other two games. So if we get a home win, we can win the cannon. Hey, but also if we go three winless over the next three, then that's going to be the game that we would tie the MLS record for the winless streak.
Yeah. And so, I think,
shut up. Please.
I think if he loses against Austin, I think that at home, that's at home, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. That'll be the end of Tab if he loses that.
Well, that's good. I remember I was listening to, I don't know if you guys listen to Orange Slices podcast with like Heath Pearson, Mark McKenzie. I remember Heath was saying when he used to play in Germany, he was on like one of the worst teams in the Bundesliga. But none of that mattered when if you beat your Derby rivals that season. And I think that it not that nothing matters this season, but if Tab manages to beat Austin and Dallas in these next couple of weeks, I think that puts a whole like new spin on the end of the season.
Yeah. I think they could
really save his job.
I think they could rally on that. You know what I mean? There's a little bit of a buzz. Whereas, I mean, what else do we have to play for this season?
Well, I mean, honestly, I mean, to be fair, if you pull out a couple wins here, I mean, we're 8 points out of the playoffs right now. And
no, don't even start. Don't get started.
I know. Playoffs? We're talking about playoffs.
But, you know, and our schedule is not exactly soft the rest of the way. But, you know, Portland has not played well. We're actually pretty significant favorites for the home game versus Portland. Austin, of course, like, who knows? They're all over the place. You know, as unlucky as we've been in these 15, you know, it's not that wild to think that you may get a couple of results here. You know, I think we've been unlucky. You know, I don't think we've deserved 15 games without a win. You know, MLS is MLS. Is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Oh, don't give me any hope, please. Stop it.
Let's start wrapping it up there with the hope that Wilson gives us, Andres. Yeah. Just for podcast sakes, I don't know if you really want to start giving some closing remarks, and I don't know if you want to end the podcast. And then if, for those of you guys that want to stick around and talk national team, just like off of the podcast recording, we can do that and just talk a little bit about the U.S. national team and the Ocho qualifying.
Yeah, I was kind of expecting this to go for a while, but like it's been almost like 50 minutes talking about Magic Orlando Dynamo, so it was pretty fun. But yeah, we still have to talk about Abby Dahlkemper and obviously the U.S. men's national team with the World Cup qualifying coming up.
Why don't we just finish up with the Dynamo Dash news, and we'll end the podcast there, and we can just talk national team off the podcast.
Yeah, we can do that for sure. And yeah, like, I would say with all these in mind, like this is pretty much what's been like going on with the Dynamo, obviously. And like everyone has brought out like so many good points, especially with Matt Jordan gone and what's going to happen next. And yeah, that's been pretty much part of the journey. So, and yeah, and I would say with that other way, like an interesting thing with the Dash going on, especially with by bringing in Abby, the Dahlkemper, being like a pretty big addition for the Dash defensively. It's been pretty weird, like, because it's so apparently, like, initially from the press release, like it was apparently, it sounded like a trade, and it reads like a trade because, like, from the press release, it's pretty much saying that the Dash acquired
Abby Dahlkemper through a trade with the Courage. And essentially that's like sent $25,000 in allocation money with incentives. And they literally said it was a trade. But then like Corey, I was here, or Corey Robkin, the GOAT forever. He asks James Clarkson about it. And James said like it was a loan. And that's where like things get confusing, because like they like James Clarkson says a loan, and then Paul Riley says, which is the head coach of North Carolina Courage, also says that it's a loan, but NWSL says that it's a trade, and everyone's like, what is going on? And obviously like people like Meg Lindenhahn, that she's been covering NWSL for years now, and with a the striker now, most recently, she essentially says that it's part of a bigger move, like towards the end of the season. So obviously that makes way more sense, but it's kind of weird, because like it reminds me of like when the Dash tried to bring in Kristen Press, and obviously they're not similar, but it's more like in the sense that pretty much how people like try to understand NWSL rules and regulation, you know. It's kind of weird. Like nobody knows.
No, man, it's worse than MLS, honestly, and especially with all the like terrible allegations and firings that have been going on with NWSL coaches this week. Have you guys been keeping up with any about that? Just a lot of things starting to come out through the cracks from players finally starting to speak up about harassment, and you know, it's terrible to hear, but hopefully it's a big change in NWSL. But I mean, in terms of the rules, you know, hopefully, as MLS did throughout the early years, there was really weird rules and obviously the weird penalty kick run-ups and all that. But I think things will slowly go changing and changing as obviously more sponsors jump on, more eyeballs start watching. But I mean, if even if the Dash have Dahlkemper for half a season, I think that could be a huge boost towards the playoff run that they're trying to make. And obviously, with there only being what 10 teams total in the table. Obviously, like we said in the past episode, it's not hard to go on a little 2-3 game winning streak, and you're looking at being in second or third place already. So super, super great to have her on board. And obviously the Dash playing right now, not the greatest look that we're hosting two spaces during that.
Yeah.
Currently down 1-0, but that's the only team. It's the only time we're going to get together today. So we'll have to cover more of the Dash next episode.
For sure. Yeah. And the scheduling gods, you know, but yeah. We're definitely going to keep going with the Twitter spaces, with the U.S. Men's National Team talk. And before we do that, we have to close out with Dynamo Lone Army, obviously. How else? Because Palomino getting all the minutes in the world with Child Independence. He played his 19th game last week in the... I believe it was his. They lost to Temporary Rowdies. Oh yeah, they did lose. They did lose to the Temporary Rowdies 2-0 on the road. And he did play. He started that game and played for 66 minutes. No goals, unfortunately. He still has his 5 still for the season. And Eric McHugh, he didn't play. He was on the bench for Charleston Battery in their 0-0 tie to Orange County. So yeah, Dynamo Lone Army.
It's growing, baby. We got Bazama out there who's on loan technically to Charlotte, but nobody knows what the hell's wrong with that guy. So.
He's in Charlotte realm, so we don't know what's going to happen. So
Matt Jordan took him along in his bag, but no, I mean, so we're just going to end the podcast here for those people listening on the recording in the future. So thank you guys for listening to Noodle Time today on Twitter Spaces, second edition, awesome to hear all y'all's opinions.